Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. There's a new organization to advance the study of the American Midwest and to give the region a stronger voice in the American historical profession. The Midwestern History Association was created this past fall, and the organization has just launched a new website, midwesternhistory.com. John Locke is the association's first president. He's also the author of the book, The Lost Region, Toward a Revival of Midwestern History, and he joins us from our studios at the University of Sioux Falls. And John, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Carl.
Also with us is South Dakota State History Professor Emeritus John Miller. He's the author of Small Town Dreams, Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America. And John, good to talk with you as well.
Good to be back again.
Well, you were both on the program a year ago, and among the things we discussed was the lack of scholarship about the Midwest. John Locke, how will the formation of the new Midwestern History Association change that?
Well, at present, the Midwesterners don't have much of a voice in the American history profession, but we hope with the organization that we've put together and a new journal and some conferences where people interested in Midwestern history can come together and collaborate and begin to work on articles and books. We hope we can slowly begin to turn the ship a little bit and create a bigger voice for the Midwest and the American history profession.
Well, John Miller, you've been a Midwestern historian for a few decades now. How long have you wanted to see an organization like this?
You know, I started 42 years ago or so as a professor, and it was just part of the environment. I didn't think about it very much. That's just the way it was. Actually, at that time, there were three different Midwestern history journals in which I published articles in each one of those, and one or two, a couple. But the thing is, they've gone. And, you know, I was once John's history professor, and if he had made that statement in my classroom, I would have nodded my head, and then I would have said, but John, you understand that there has been work done on Midwestern history. There have been articles and books published. In fact, I read a review of John's book in Kansas History yesterday, which said that very thing. However, he's exactly right in saying we don't have any journals, or we didn't until we have the new one that he launched here a while back, was the point man on, and we do have this new organization. So the organization and the journal are huge. Having a sense of self-identity is huge, and there will be more books and more articles written as a result of what John and others have been doing in creating this organization.
Carl, I just was going to make a note about another related field of American history, the field of Western history. So this would be roughly the Missouri River West, anything to the west of there. And there are, I would say, seven or eight different centers that focus on the history of the American West. And they have a very prominent historical organization. They have a very prominent journal. And there are people hired in history departments to teach the history of the American West. So it's a very organized field. And even the Great Plains, who, you know, probably some people would think would be understudied, actually has three centers of study in various places on the plains. And it has the Center for Great Plains Studies down at the University of Nebraska. And it's a fairly active field. But the Midwest, prior to a couple of months ago, had no history organization. It had no center for the study of the Midwest. It had no journals. It was a big hole in American historiography. So
that works both ways. It works both for the reader. The reader wants to know, where should I go to find Midwestern history? And it works for the authors, the researchers, the scholars who want to publish. If they don't have a place that they know will be interested in publishing their thing, they're less likely, at least, to want to spend their time and invest their resources and to take the risk of writing something and not being able to get it published after all said and done.
Yeah, so John Miller, it sounds like that the creation of this, you know, before, without the journals, without this history association, There would be, it sounds like there's perhaps some history that could have been investigated by historians that wasn't, so it perhaps was lost, maybe some things that they could have been writing about that they didn't because there was no place to put it.
That's exactly right. And for people who are more calculating than me, they probably do that. You asked me before about myself. You know, I'm the type of guy who goes out and does the things I want to do. And if somebody wants to buy into it, all the better. And it's kind of a risky proposition. And it's worked okay for me, but it doesn't work for everyone that way.
I think John really put his finger on something important here, though, when he said that for a historian to embark on a book research project, which can take upwards of 10 to 15 years, they really need some assurance in the beginning that there's going to be a place for this material, for this research, for the ultimate book. And you have to have university presses and other people willing to publish these books. And now there are a lot of programs that publish Western history and Southern history and the history of New England and colonial America, but there's very little emphasis given to the Midwest, and we want to create a space for that. And I think that there would be a lot of interest in this if we can get the books to market and get them in front of people. Take, for example, Carl, what just happened this week with the Laura Ingalls Wilder book published by our small press in South Dakota, out in Pierre, the South Dakota State Historical Society Press. They took a gamble on publishing her memoirs, and I don't think they had any idea how much this would take off. But now it is number one on Amazon.com, and it's getting full write-ups in the Wall Street Journal for being number one on Amazon.com, and they literally cannot print books fast enough. They printed 15,000, they immediately sold out. They printed another 15,000, they immediately sold out. So they printed another 45,000. It's an amazing story. But just think about, what is Laura Ingalls Wilder talking about? She's talking about growing up in a small, rural, Midwestern area. There's an audience for that kind of work, but it's hard to convince some people who hold the levers of power or manage the levers of power in the culture to take those sort of chances and publish those books.
Here's an example of how this works. Mm-hmm. Because we have this new Midwestern History Organization, because we have a new Middle West Review available. You know, I have written three books on Laura Ingalls Wilder, but it never occurred to me till just a month or two ago that I could write another article about her on the theme of Laura Ingalls Wilder as a Midwesterner. That's going to be the topic of my talk at the Laura Palooza, which is going to be held in Brookings at South Dakota State University this July. And I'm writing that entirely with the intention of submitting that to a journal somewhere, and probably Middle West Review. That's how these things work, you know?
Yeah.
It's not all planned out. It's often intuitive. It's often just something almost subconscious, and that supply creates demand in a way.
And you have to have a platform or a venue for these sorts of research projects to begin. And if I could, Carl, just mention that we will be having the first Midwestern History Conference, a conference that focuses on specifically the history of the Midwest, for the first time in decades, maybe ever. I don't know when this has ever happened before. And it will occur at the end of April in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And this is a very exciting development. And it is going to be hosted by the Hauenstein Center at Grand Valley State University. So for any of you listeners out there who want to be in on the ground floor of the early conversations of promoting and reviving this history of the Midwest, I advise them to check out that.
This is a movement that is just in the earliest stages, and eventually the people east of the Hudson River are going to figure out something is going on here. And they're going to start writing articles in national magazines. I mean, they already have to some degree, but they're going to pick it up. And John, by the way, has a panel at the Organization of American Historians Convention in St. Louis, a wonderful place to be doing a panel on Midwestern history, St. Louis in the heart of the Midwest.
In talking about this Midwestern History Association, the new organization, as well as the academic journal, the Middle West Review, what will it take, John, for this to be successful? As John Miller mentioned earlier, that there were other Midwest journals that he could write to, but they disappeared. What will it take for this to be successful?
Well, I think it's going to take a lot of people rolling up their sleeves and dedicating themselves to building up this field. And I think it's also going to take some acknowledgement from the academy. I think this is going to be the acid test, really, is if the academy and university presidents and provosts begin to say, yes, this is a big gap in our knowledge. This is something we've been missing out on. A whole section of the country has been understudied for a half century. Let's do something about that. Let's hire a professor to teach about this. And let me just say that we're not asking for the world, Carl. All I'm asking is that, for example, the University of Minnesota, which has 60 historians, I would like for the University of Minnesota to have one of those historians offer one class on the history of the Midwest every other year or something. That's not asking for very much. The places like the University of Minnesota used to have three or four people who taught the history of the Midwest, and they used to take the region in which they were located very seriously, and they used to engage their students about the history of their state and region. But that's just not considered fashionable anymore, unfortunately. But I think it's very important to a young person's identity and development, and it helps them to place themselves in the world in this sort of chaotic, postmodern, highly electronic, Twitter-type world. People need to know what their roots are. They need to better understand their identity, and they'll be healthier because of it.
By the way, just to encourage some of the presidents and the provosts to add this to the curriculum, if there are any millionaires or billionaires out there who want to contribute some money, you know, a couple of years ago, the University of Missouri Press was put out of business to save a few $100,000, while the University of Missouri spent $72 million to add 6,000 seats to their football stadium. And we have a few football stadium projects that have been going on in the state of South Dakota lately. Hey, as long as we're going to do that, let's, a couple million would put an endowed professor there and maybe support another journal.
No, you know, you're talking about identity, and this question of Midwestern identity is something that we've all talked about before on the program. And there's been this interesting discussion in Minnesota lately about them seceding from the Midwest and rebranding themselves as North. And John Locke, wondering if that's just an example of the difficulty in defining where and what the Midwest is.
Well, one of the problems with this field is pinning down the exact parameters of the Midwest. But I think John and I both agree that we don't want to stumble over that particular matter. I think we can come to a general consensus about what the Midwest is, beginning in Ohio, stretching out into eastern Dakotas, Nebraska, and Kansas. And I think there's a lot of this region that we all agree is in the Midwest, so let's not get hung up on the exact parameters. I would say on that Walker Art Center discussion about where Minnesota is located, if you peel back the onion a little bit and look at who those people were that were promoting that, they're mostly marketing people. These aren't historians. These aren't people that understand cultural regionalism. They're not the people that understand the heritage of the Midwest and how Minnesota fits into it. These are people that are looking for something catchy and edgy and new to use to market stocking caps. That was the precise origins of this. How do we sell more stocking hats in Minnesota? So I think that was a little too cutesy, and I would not take it very seriously. But the problem is these sort of conversations take off about sort of ridiculous suggestions that Minnesota secede from the Midwest because we don't know our Midwestern history very well. This is one of the consequences of not having a strong Midwestern history field.
Well, John Miller, we only have about a minute left here. Given your time as a professor, it almost sounds like things are in a good place right now as far as Midwestern history, when there's younger historians like John Locke who are trying to push this forward and creating more of a forum for this scholarship and discussion.
Exactly. I'm very optimistic about it. I look at the program for the OAH in St. Louis in April, and I recognize hardly any names. The older generation is passing by the new ones. You can see them on the staffs right here at USF across the street at Augustana. They're all well-trained. They're all enthusiastic, and they're all raring to go. So hopefully they're going to put some of those energies into the history of the Midwest.
All right. Well, John Miller and John Locke, I want to thank you both for taking the time to stop by our studios at the USF and talking about Midwestern history again.
Thank you, Carl.
Thanks very much, Carl.
John Locke is the first president of the newly formed Midwestern History Association. He's the author of the book, The Lost Region Toward a Revival of Midwestern History. John Miller is South Dakota State University History Professor Emeritus. He's the author of Small Town Dream, Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America. You can find out more about the Midwestern History Association at their brand new website. It's just up. It's MidwesternHistory.com.